coming to you live from the Morningstar Mission sponsored studios. This is Carl and Crew Mornings on 90.1 FM Moody Radio.
I had some doubts, serious doubts about the Word of God raised at Sand Lake Baptist Church. One story in particular, wasn't buying it.
Uh-oh.
Not at all.
How old were you?
Little guy. Okay. Was in Mr. Doner's Sunday school class. I don't even know why we got into this story. Oh, man. But we got into this story in Sunday school class, and we had some good thinkers there. What were we, fourth, fifth grade, something like that. And Doug Doner's son, Mark, brilliant kid. He would raise some great questions in there. The answer in that class wasn't Jesus for everything. We were thinking about stuff. It was pretty cool. I mean, none of us then were born again. All of us since have surrendered to Jesus. Isn't that kind of cool?
Yes, very cool.
And still my buddies went up to my dad's funeral and four of them were there from
fourth to fifth grade.
Sunday school. Isn't that something?
50 plus years ago?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's leaving an impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that just proves, by the way, a little parenthetical thought here, that just proves that the seeds that you're planting in your wayward kids may bear some picking fruit one day, mom or dad. Just hang on. So the story that wigged me out was the two angels that came into Sodom. I couldn't buy this because we were asking questions. Questions like, well, what do you mean, Mr. Doner? So let me read you the part that really confused me. But before these angels laid down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, I remember him saying every man in the city, surrounded the house and they called the lot. Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them. And I'm like, so I remember Calvin going, so they wanted to know him.
The innocence of a child. I love it.
Well, the book.
Yeah.
They wanted to know him. And Mr. Doner, in a very classy way, explained what was going on. That was the first time I was ever introduced to anything like that, but it was appropriate. And he had actually checked with parents and stuff. So he explained it to us. And I'm like, there is no way this happened. This did not happen.
What about it seemed so unbelievable? Kind of the depravity of it. The fact that it was every...
Didn't even compute for me, Allie.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little boy. I got a crush on little girls. I had no concept of anything like this in my life. I could not imagine for a second this happening. Fast forward a whole bunch of years. By this time, I'm married, kids, pastor. Minds around this now. Still wondering... It's quite a story. Sat down with a friend here for coffee in Chicago. Told me a story. Neat kid, man. Saved out of a life of homosexuality. He actually went to a party to put his friends on notice. And these guys were having nothing of it. In a weird event, in this large home where he was talking to these friends, they began to come after him. They chased him down a hall, into a room, started wailing on the door. You know what my buddy told me? He said, Carl, you know that story in Genesis 19? He said, I saw it happen. They wanted to get a piece of me before I got out of there that day. Said it was the most surreal thing in the world. You might say, well, that's a crazy story. Now, listen to me now, Boom Crew. We've got crazy stuff going on all over our city. Stuff that is absolutely heartbreaking, inhumane, wrong, raw, crazy. And all that happens as we look at our culture decline is you'll see the fulfillment of things that seemed impossible years ago. Just the truth. Sometimes it's time and circumstance that clears up our doubts. Sometimes it's when you have someone coming in and breaking open the Word of God saying, hey, let's look at this a little more closely. Sometimes it's an argument from culture and the time that we live in. Sometimes it's just a good old-fashioned bust open the word and let's do some forensic analysis on this thing. So you get some doubts. Some of you have had some doubts about what, Allie?
Just in general?
Nah. Specifically where we want to aim today.
Yeah, doubts about the resurrection, or maybe doubts about the Bible being true, or maybe you have heard people say, well, come on, I mean, don't all paths lead to the same God?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody believes in something. How do you know that your way is the right way? And maybe you've been a Christian for a while, so you kind of bow up a little bit, but in there's a quiet seed that's planted in your heart that maybe goes, well, how do I know it's true?
And most of those never get uttered, right?
No. I mean, after you've been in it a while, it's like, oh, I don't know if I want to admit that I have doubts about that.
Hang on, Boom Crew. Minute and a half. One of our favorite, J. Warner Wallace, is going to be with us. Let's clear up some doubts.
Your shot of hope to make it through the day. It's Carl and Crew Mornings.
One of the coolest things, Allie, that we discovered here a couple of weeks ago is that people were given permission here on our morning show to have doubts, just like Thomas did.
Yes.
And Jesus didn't browbeat Thomas. He said, come on, bring it. And I think sometimes we feel sheepish or ashamed. And we opened up the text line to say, what do you get weak in the knees about? And one of them was this whole issue of, all right, at the end of the day, how do we know Christianity is really true?
There are a lot of people out there that believe other things. How do I know that what I've built my life on is actually the truth?
We got the man here. Love him. J. Warner Wallace. And Boom Crew, you need to know something. He has got resources that are dynamite. We're going to give you a link here in a little bit. Hold tight because we got him with us right now. The man, J. Warner Wallace. How are you, my friend?
I'm so glad to be with you guys. You may ask some great questions. And I'll tell you something that you see when they do studies of young people. If for no other reason, anyone who's listening to this right now should be concerned if they've got young people in their family, high schoolers, Gen Z, even millennials in their family. Because it turns out that if you're raising your kids, there is an issue related to doubt that you can actually leverage. Here's what I mean. All the studies that show this, that demonstrate that when young people have doubts, it doesn't mean they're necessarily going to walk away from the faith. But if they're in an environment where they don't feel like they're allowed to express their doubts, they are far more likely to walk away. So what that means for us as parents is that we don't necessarily have to have all the answers, at least not yet. We can get those. But what we can't do is shut down the questions. And you'll see that even students who have doubts, they don't actually even get answered, but they were allowed to express those doubts, they don't walk away.
Yes.
So that's good news for us. We just need to be able to allow the conversations to occur.
So let's start with a little bit about your background. Your Dateline featured cold case homicide detective, popular national speaker, podcast host. What's the good starting point for even starting to address this doubt of, okay, so maybe I've grown up in church, I've always believed this, but what if other religions are true? How would I even know? Where would I start?
Every faith system makes a claim. Every worldview makes a series of claims. And most people in our world today want to know, well, how do I measure that evidentially to know if it's true? So if I've got friends who are Buddhists or friends who are even who are a Mormon, a variation, right? Actually a heretical twist of Christianity. Well, how do I know which of these systems are true? That was my question. I was not a believer. I wasn't raised in a Christian family. Didn't know any Christians growing up. But my wife was interested enough to get us to go to church. And when I got there, you know, I thought, well, the pastor said that Jesus was the smartest man who ever lived. Well, first of all, do I even know he was a man who lived? And two, if he is somebody who lived, so what? What did he say was so smart? So I bought a Bible just to kind of see what the smart words of Jesus were. Here's what I discovered, though. I thought I would just have a bunch of collection of wisdom statements, but that's not what the Gospels are. The Gospels are written by people who want us to believe that this series of events actually occurred historically in a particular place in history, a particular place on the globe, under a particular ruling empire that was in charge at this time in history. These are claims about history. And that's a very different kind of systemic claim. For example, if you're studying Buddha, Buddha makes no, there's no claims in Buddhism about a series of historical events that you could actually check them against. But Christianity does make, it's Christianity's story of the wise, risen Son of God. occurs in a historical account, a series of four called the Gospels. And you can measure those, you can test those, because every case I've ever worked, it occurs in a place and time. So if I've got a case from 35 years ago that's unsolved, well, that's an historical event that I have to measure. And people have made claims about that historical event. They're usually on my supplemental reports. And I have to kind of test those claims to see, is what the witnesses are saying true or not? And that's really what I tried to do with the Gospels when I first opened that Bible. And it turns out if you'll simply do that, if you'll simply test the Gospel authors as if they are eyewitnesses making claims on supplemental reports in a cold case, you'll find that they pass the test, because the test is pretty rigorous and it's pretty well established within criminal trials. So I simply applied that test, and that's why I came to the conclusion. And by the way, if you apply that test to other theistic worldviews, other worldviews that involve any idea of deity, you'll find that they don't pass the test. So the great thing about a test like this is it leads you to what's true, but it also guards you from what's false.
How important is it that these four gospel accounts, they couldn't have colluded? You must have seen witnesses that have almost colluded. But the distance, time, space, even distance from the original storyline, is there value in those testimonies?
Yeah, actually, you know, I'm somebody who's very skeptical of claims related to conspiracies. Conspiracies to lie about anything, especially contemporary conspiracies. Now, I know a lot of us in the church, humans in general, love conspiracy theories.
Yeah, we do, boy.
I like to kind of see a conspiracy theory behind every claim. But I'll tell you that there are certain aspects of conspiracies that have to be in place. Yes, it is possible to pull off a conspiracy, but you need five things. And I know that from only having investigated and filed charges on conspiracies where more than one person is involved in a murder. So here's what you need. You need, number one, to be successful, you've got a better chance of being successful if you have the smallest possible number of co-conspirators, because it's easier for two people to tell a lie than it is for 22.
Yeah.
Also, you want to hold it for the shortest possible time available. It's easier to hold a lie for an hour than it is to hold a lie for a year. You also want to have a good communication between co-conspirators. That's why the first thing we do is separate people who are telling us these stories to see if their stories line up. And you also want to have the best familial relationships. It's hard to get a mom to snitch off her son, okay?
Right.
So family relationships matter. And finally, you want the lowest amount of pressure. If no one's even investigating it, it'll last forever. But as soon as you start to apply pressure, you'll see things start to break down. Well, the reason why I know this works in criminal trials is because I've reversed all of those on people who are making claims to kind of break down their conspiracies. The same thing would be true in the first century. There are just far too many people making the claim, okay? And they're under far too great of pressure, the pressure that basically they're going to die for their claims,
yeah.
Right? And they're separated by thousands of miles at the point of their interrogations, so they can't talk to each other and say, hey, what are you telling him? I'll tell him the same thing, because that's what co-conspirators basically do. And they don't have the kinds of familial relationships. Remember, Matthew is not even somebody that they even wanted in the group, okay?
Right.
This is not somebody who was the disciple of John the Baptist. He comes in late as a guy named Levi, who's a tax collector. Yet he ends up writing and dying for his claims about Jesus. And, you know, so these are the kinds of things. And finally, you know, look, they're just holding it for way too long. If you're telling me that 1,000 people in the federal government have been holding a conspiracy for 50 years, I'm thinking, really, it's probably a simpler explanation, because it's so hard for that many people to hold under pressure and not break, especially if there's money involved or some incentive, like, I'll spare your life, okay?
And so getting their stories straight after 50 years, right?
Yes. Chuck Colson said that he couldn't get 12 people after the Watergate conspiracy to hold the story for, you know, for a month, let alone get 12 people to hold it for 60 years. And that's the problem with these claims. There's too many people holding it for way too long, under way too much pressure, without any way to communicate with each other, and not enough deep family relationships to hold the thing together. And that's why I say, look, is it possible that this is? Sure. I always say it's possible to anything. But that's not the standard we operate on in life. We operate not beyond a possible doubt, because you don't know anything beyond a possible doubt. You operate beyond a reasonable doubt. Look, you wouldn't even start your car tomorrow, because it's possible it could blow up in your driveway. But it's not reasonable, so you start your car. You wouldn't go on the freeway, because it's possible you could die on the freeway, but it's not always reasonable, so you go on the freeway. That's the standard we operate against. And so this is what I would say to everyone listening. Look, the difference between possible doubt and reasonable doubt are all of your unanswered questions. But you go through life making all kinds of reasonable inferences, even though you have open questions. Do you understand how the lock on your door works? No, but you still insert the key. So you don't have to have an answer to everything in order to operate fully. The same is true with the Christian faith. Do I have questions? Sure. But the most meaningful questions have been answered, and that gap between possible and reasonable has been closed for me. And by the way, if you're an atheist listening to this, tell me how the universe began, why it looks to be fine-tuned, why there's the appearance of design in biology, why how a life comes from non-life in a universe. Look, there's tons of unanswered questions under atheism. It's not like any of us holds a worldview in which we don't have unanswered questions.
Ironclad, yeah.
I just think the unanswered questions are fewer here in the Christian worldview.
Jay Warner Wallace, our guest right now. If you want more from him, you can text the word CASE. We'll get you his website. Text CASE to 312-274-9624. Coming up, let's talk about the resurrection. Oftentimes when we share the gospel, we talk about the death of Jesus Christ, him dying on the cross. But 1 Corinthians 15 is clear. If there's no resurrection,
we're to be pitied.
We are to be pitied. How can we prove that the resurrection actually happened? Coming up.
Whether it's number one or 100, take that step with Jesus today. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
Jay Warner Wallace with us here, and we're going to have a link for you again near the end of our conversation, but bring your doubts in. How do we know Christianity is true?
Let's talk about the resurrection. You've written and talked extensively about this. Give us some of the high points of how we can make a compelling case for the resurrection being a very reasonable thing to believe.
I think part of this for us is we have to ask the question, how do we explain evidence? And any death scene you walk into, not every death scene is a crime scene. We have to figure out, is the evidence here to suggest this is a murder, or is this a suicide, or natural, or an accidental? So what we're doing is assessing the evidence in the room, and then asking ourselves, what are the best possible explanations? Well, if you did this with the resurrection, well, there are certain minimal evidences that even non-believing scholars will, as an atheist, for example, I would have said, you know what? So, okay, I think Jesus probably lived. I'm not sure he's who you say he is. And so what? He died on a cross. Okay, lots of people lived in the first century who died on a cross. And certainly disciples claimed to see him risen and the tomb was empty. But I didn't believe any of those things were necessarily meant that Christianity was true or that Jesus rose from the grave. Why? Because I could find other possible explanations for the empty tomb and the claims of the disciples, right? I could say, well, maybe they imagined it. Maybe they wanted it so badly. Maybe they lied about it. Maybe they were mistaken. He wasn't really dead. Maybe one person saw something and influenced the others. In other words, I had a list of non-Christian explanations for the details of the initial claims that are in Scripture.
Good.
So what I did, I simply made a list of all of the possible explanations from a non-Christian perspective as an atheist, and I included on that list the Christian explanation. And then what you do in any death scene is you simply compare the evidences to the explanations, and you start crossing off the explanations that just don't work. They have fatal flaws. And every explanation, by the way, is going to have some strengths and some weaknesses. This is true for all the atheist explanations of the resurrection, but don't be mistaken about it. It's also true for the Christian explanation. So I list the strengths and weaknesses. Now, here's what I discovered. If you look at all of the atheist explanations, they all have fatal flaws. I mean, this is why there are so many of them. By the way, when you see that atheists offer like six different possible explanations, why do they offer six explanations? Well, because to be honest, five of them, they all realize the other five don't work.
Yeah, they're chucking pasta here.
Yeah, so you're basically just trying anything because you know. And by the way, people who advocate for position two, they deny position one, three, four, five, and six. That's how it works. So I looked at all of these explanations. And the one explanation that most atheists would say, oh, I can't go there, is the Christian explanation, the one that says, hey, he just rose from the grave the way it was reported. So the question is then, okay, so how do I explain? Well, what's keeping me from that? What is the weakness, the fatal weakness of the Christian explanation? Let me tell you what it is. It's the supernatural aspect of a resurrection. In other words, as a philosophical naturalist, there was no way I could accept this explanation because it involves a resurrection, and that was the very thing I was denying. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. The question under investigation is the resurrection the most reasonable inference? But you can't start by saying, well, no, I reject resurrections. That's not reasonable. That's the thing we're investigating. Now, what helped me to kind of view it, to reconsider it, was as an atheist, I believed in extranatural explanations. In other words, I believe that the universe came from nothing. It's called Big Bang cosmology, and this is still the standard cosmological model amongst astrophysicists, that everything in the universe, all space, time, and matter, came into existence from nothing. That means the
supernatural.
Right. As a finite universe is caused by something outside of space, time, and matter, which would at least by definition be extranatural, supranatural. Why would you? Okay, look, if there's something that can cause the universe to come into existence from nothing, then the most significant miracle in all of Scripture is not in the New Testament. It's not a risen Christ. It's not walking on water. It's not feeding 5,000. It's in Genesis 1. Everything from nothing. If there's a being that can pop everything from nothing, then I'm guessing he can probably walk on water. These are all small potato New Testament miracles. So I asked myself, why am I hesitating to even consider the reasonable possibility of a miracle in the New Testament when I already embrace an extraordinary extra natural event as an atheist? So it was time for me to reconsider my bias against the supernatural. If you'll just do that, you'll find that the Christian explanation for the resurrection has by far the most strengths and by far the least liabilities. And that's where I decided, okay, this makes the most sense.
Jay Warner Wallace, our guest right now. I want you to vamp on this truth that you gave us some time ago, but it just rocked me. The fact that Paul cites in 1 Corinthians 15 that there were 500 witnesses, and he makes this little dot, 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 and many of them that are alive today. Why would that be foolish for him to say if he was concocting a lie?
Well, this is what's so powerful about 1 Corinthians 15. Even amongst biblical skeptics, even skeptics like a Bart Ehrman, for example, they don't deny that Paul wrote 1 Corinthians, and they don't deny that Paul wrote 1 Corinthians very early in history, one of the earliest New Testament books. So even the skeptics will say, okay, yeah, you know what? This is from Paul, and he's making this claim. What a crazy claim to make within 20, 25 years of the resurrection, when people would still be alive to know if it's true. In other words, if you want to lie about Jesus, here's how you do it. You wait till everyone who knows the truth is dead. Then you can say whatever you want about Jesus, because no one's going to be alive to know that you're lying. But to make this kind of claim, hey, folks, there are still 500 people you could talk to. Most of them are still alive. And he's making this claim, according to the skeptics, early in history. Now, think about that for a minute. Number one, that's a bold claim. It's a risky claim if you're making it knowing that this is a lie. And number two, it's a claim that really talks about how early the scriptures have to be. Think about it. All of Paul's early letters are written as though he knows the contents of the gospel. Yet we're going to claim the Gospels are written late in history. How can they be? Paul is already referencing all of the claims of the gospel in his letters. The idea that there's a risen Christ, that is the foundational, boldest, riskiest claim of the Gospels. Right, here's what it does. It puts Jesus in an entirely different category. You know, silly me, if you're an ancient sage who rose from the dead, I am probably likely to listen to what you have to say. That separates him from other ancient sages who may have been wise, because let's face it, all of us have access to the nature of God in some ways, just through his creation. We see that in Romans 1, we see this in Psalm 19. So I'm not surprised that other ancients might say something wise, but you've got a risen sage. That's very different. We should be looking at Jesus in a different light altogether.
Jay Warner Wallace, Boom Crew. I got to tell you, my brother, I am so proud of you, and I'm so grateful that God is using you. And right now, you want to get some resources. I know you do, Boom Crew, and boy, have we got a link for you. Now, this is important for you to note. You're going to get an opportunity to see through the lens of investigative forensic work, whether or not we are building our life on a rock or quicksand. And we got a link for you.
I have found this to be very personally enriching, the podcasts, the blogs. So this is one that I recommend often. If you want this resource, the website, and then go from there, there's a lot there. Just text the word CASE to 312-274-9624. CASE to 312-274-9624.
Yeah, and this will be an opportunity for you to give some information to some friends, family, maybe even skeptics. I'd say Jay Warner's one of the rare guys that you could take an absolute skeptic or even an atheist and go, hey, just wrestle with some of these things. Just throw it out there. It's that profound. I mean, phew. All right, check it out. Here's how you get this link.
Case to 312-274-9624.
Well, we got a lot going on here today. Guess what? Never to be forgotten. No siree, Bob. Uh-uh. Coming up, the most epic moment in our week. Allie thinks it's funny.
Everything you need to start your day right. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
It's that time. Young Thunder, it's just this moment in history, in time.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad you were born for this?
You know, my grandkids one day are going to ask me, where were you, Dad, or Grandpa, when Allie Thinks It's Funny was playing?
They might even go deeper. They might say, Dad, what was that like to be there?
I know. I was going to say, where was that like? I pressed the buttons.
Yeah. You were within feet of Allie when she presenting this material.
And I'll say, listen, kiddos, this was an extraordinary time because sometimes, I thought it was funny. Sometimes I didn't. But you know what? Allie always thought it was funny.
Making herself laugh no matter who joins her. It's time for Allie Thinks It's Funny.
First, a little milestone. We've been at this little segment, believe it or not, we're 5 months into this.
Wow. Impressive.
Five months.
It's the same time we launched 180 Chicago in the Northwest Burbs.
Well,
two
congrats.
Momentous things.
5 months in, still got some jokes left in my arsenal. First up, Carl, you spent some time doing some fishing.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you might like this one.
I'm
Maybe
excited.
You know the answer.
Okay.
Where do fishermen get their haircut? Where do fishermen get their haircut?
Something to do with a bobber.
The bobber shop.
Oh, I didn't know it. I actually didn't put bobber and barber together until you said it.
The bobber shop. There you go.
Okay.
Carl got the first one. Second one, Young Thunder, I'd like to say this one is for you, but you're probably going to hate it.
Okay.
And that's okay. I don't know why so many of my jokes involve animals, but they're just funny. Why can't cows wear flip-flops? Why can't cows wear flip-flops?
Mm. I don't know.
Because they lack toes.
That is good.
That was pretty good.
You like that?
That is good.
Okay.
They lack toes.
That was amazing.
Lactose.
Good job, Allie.
Lactose intolerant, maybe. Text the word jokes to 312-274-9624. Jokes to 312-274-9624. If you want a couple to share with your kids, grandkids, coworkers, or what is that?
That's his cow.
Ah, got it. Jokes to 312-274-9624.
Want to hear a moose?
Yeah, sure.
Moose mating call. Ready for it?
Here it is.
This is a moose mating call.
Are you serious?
It's a moose mating call. Almost to a T.
Huh.
That's, wow.
We'll all be.
Shut the door. We got to make sure we don't get any crazy attacks in here.
There's six moose outside.
Yeah. Running down Wells Street. Here they come.
The craziest carpool in Chicagoland. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
Okay, guys, I've got a question for you. Where have you seen your life change the most? In what setting? I really mean this.
I like this question.
How have you seen your life changed the most? In what setting? And I don't want to even feed the ideas here. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, you may have to give us something to kind of like...
I don't want to pigeonhole people into things.
Okay.
So if we're going to do it, we got to be robust with the opportunities that we've got in front of us. So you want to do that?
Sure.
Okay. So one-to-one, either mentoring or sharpening your saw, small group, seminar, big event. What are the other ways that
my mind immediately
personal
went to,
study.
Yeah. Is it your personal study? Is it a prayer meeting? Is it Sunday morning services?
So there's a bunch more.
During worship? Is it during a sermon? That's where I'm at.
Okay, so let's go through them all from top to bottom. Sunday morning service, prayer meeting,
One-on-one mentorship,
small group,
yep,
seminar, mm-hmm. which is different than conference,
yep, personal devotional time, personal retreat, maybe.
So I want you to think back in your life, where has God moved the dial most for you?
What setting? I really like this. This is interesting. I'm curious to hear what people have to say.
And we're going to take text messages only on this one. So just fire it up right now. And I want to know this. A radio host wants to know it, but mainly a pastor wants to know it.
Yeah. And this could even be maybe in a corner in a chair with a book. Maybe it's a book that radically changed you.
Right. But it can be any of those things.
Any setting, any atmosphere, any space. Where have you been where you felt like God most met you and changed you?
And the key here is changed you. Not where you got good information or even got fired up, but where change began to happen. Actual change began to happen in your life. Think about that, Boom Crew. Think about it deeply. Where did change most happen in your life? What setting? 312-274-9624. We're going to go survey says here in just a moment.
Yeah, already got some good ones coming in.
312-274-9624. Text us right now. In what setting did your life most change? 312-274-9624.
Discipleship to start your day. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
This is so good. Your feedback, Boom Crew. That's why you are the Boom Crew. It's what you are. Asking a question. In what setting did your life most change? In what setting did your life most change? We're getting some great feedback here. I hadn't even mentioned this, but short-term missions coming up a lot.
Yes.
But not the number one. What are some other ones without giving away the top answer here?
Okay, listening to sermons and worship, small group Bible study, short-term missions, and then some that are very situational, like someone getting fired from a job actually was what changed their life the most, because then they had more time to spend at church, celebrate recovery meetings, in a restorative practices training, serving in my home church, times of trial and suffering. I saw that one come in quite a few times.
Yeah, I saw tragedy come in,
At an altar during worship, various church leadership and teaching roles, specific song this person heard, radio in church, youth camp and retreat, one-on-one mentoring, celebrate recovery, men's group, college ministry. I'm trying to skip the ones that hit on the number one answer. During pain, in church services, Bible study fellowship. That's another good one. Personal tragedy.
Did you put chronic illness?
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that came in.
Applying what I read in books, women's adult Sunday school. And then I think, go ahead and give the one that we've seen come in the most.
The biggest one is personal alone time with the Word of God.
Yes.
Quiet time at home. At home is mentioned over and over again. So here's the encouraging thing, because in John 15, the abiding principle or metaphor that Jesus uses there, he says, if you remain in me, John repeats that in 1 John, that this remaining thing is about this. If you remain in my word and you abide in it, is what the ESV says, NIV says, remain. If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. And the word is linked to this fruit-bearing branch exclusively. And by the way, it's not just being in the word, it's listening to what the Father says and then enjoying the fruit of what he does in our life. So that would comport really well with the abiding principle. This is good stuff to learn. What about for you, Allie?
I think it would have to be the personal devotional time with the Lord would be number one. And then number two for me was a season when I was in a mom's ministry at my church. That was a really impactful season in my life.
A lot of life change came
out
of it.
A lot of life change. I mean, navigating life with other moms who were kids around the same age and then kind of growing up there and then being asked to take on a leadership role there, which was the first time I had really done anything like that. And it was very scary, but it really stretched me and started to grow me up in another way.
It's really cool. Okay, coming up here in a moment, it's interesting because I think although personal time alone with God in the Word and breaking it open and having, I mean, quiet time with the Lord where you're taking this stuff in, it's not just learning, but you're putting feet to it. Awesome. But there's other things that catalyze that to happen. In my life, a Promise Keepers event in Dallas, Texas that I took a bunch of men to was so catalytic in my spiritual growth. It's profound. I think I'm living in the aftermath of kind of the fumes of that today. And that happened many, many years ago. Weekend services can be a catalyst. I'm convinced that they are not to be a landing pad. They're to be a launching pad. I think Sunday services are not where you land to go get fed. It's a launching pad where, God willing, you're launched into more personal discovery. So coming up here, we're going to feature Levantate, possibly a huge catalyst for you spiritually.
Waking you up with adrenaline and Jesus. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
I would venture to say, looking over my life, that there's two environments that I have been most launched and catapulted for in my relationship with Jesus. One-to-one mentoring with great men that God's put in my life, without a doubt. Seasoned older men, some of them have gone on to be with the Lord, like Luis Palau, for instance. Great man, great friend, and conferences. Conferences can be catapults. They absolutely can. You believe that, don't you, Dr. Mark Job? They can be great, can't they, my friend?
You know, I talk to people all the time that it was at a conference that they made the decision. It was at the conference that they were inspired. It was at the conference. It doesn't solve the journey,
nope.
But for so many, it initiates the journey.
Boom.
It's a turning point. It's an awakening moment. And absolutely, that's why, hey, Moody does several conferences every year. We continue to do them because we just hear these responses of God really using these in a powerful way.
So, Dr. Mark Job, you're a 10th president of the Moody Bible Institute. You're going to be a part of a big event here at Moody, and it's for Spanish-speaking men of all ages. Levantate. Give us the vision for this one.
You know, you and Carl have done pretty good at saying it. Levantate.
I love it. It's one of my favorite words to say.
And what is it? What does that mean?
So, levantate means rise up. And, you know, it tells us in Isaiah chapter 60, verse 1, it says, in Spanish, it says, levántate, resplandece, which means arise and shine. And so, you know, it's got that double meaning to it. We really believe that there's a lot of men, not just Spanish-speaking men, but men in general that for whatever reason, sometimes identity, sometimes the brutal pressure of just living in this world, sometimes lukewarmness, sometimes just not understanding their call, that live at a level that is not their God-intended level. And so this conference is a challenge to rise up,
right,
rise up
on
in your family, rise up in your spiritual life, in your church, in your community, in the call that God has upon your life, but specifically for Spanish-speaking men.
I've seen pictures and video from past Levantate events, and the level of excitement in the room is unbelievable. Have you found that to be true?
You know, we've only done it one time, so this is the second year. But the first year, I was just surprised at the energy. I mean, these men, from the moment we started, they were ready to go. It wasn't like you got to rev them up. I mean, I don't know if it's just a bunch of men coming together, add some of that Hispanic blood into it. And man, these men were ready to roar from the get-go. The worship, the energy, last year, and I think we're going to do it this year again. We started with sort of the flag ceremony of countries represented, and there were 20 some Spanish speaking countries. You know, a lot of people when they think Spanish, they think, well, you know, it's kind of all the same, just, you know, someone that speaks Spanish. But there are so many different cultures represented in the Hispanic community with the same language, but different cultures. And so this is a mixture of men from many, many different countries that primarily are around the Chicagoland area. But it was a powerful event last year. And so we decided we need to do this again.
We've got a keyword for you if you are interested in this event. It's coming up. It is for Spanish-speaking men of all ages right here at Moody Bible Institute. Just text the word conference. We'll get you the details. Text conference to 312-274-9624. Just text conference to 312-274-9624.
Making herself laugh no matter who joins her. It's time for Allie Thinks It's Funny.
Yes. Yes.
Even okay. The cows are going nuts.
It is springtime.
It is.
Got a little work done around my yard.
Way to go.
Well, okay. I had someone help me with work around my yard.
Did those guys come out again?
I had some landscaping help, so let's not take the credit for it. But it is the time of year where you are planting things. Spring is upon us. Someone is. Why wouldn't you be able to plant flowers in your yard? Under what circumstance would you not be able to plant flowers in your yard?
I got no idea.
When you haven't botany.
So dumb.
That's pretty good.
So dumb.
No, that's pretty good.
It takes a second.
Oh, it doesn't take a second. If it takes a second, we got another dad joke.
Did it take a second?
No.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
I felt like there was a delayed reaction.
That's the worst. That's the worst to hear that, huh, Young Thunder?
Was it just the fact that you just didn't get it?
Is that why you didn't laugh?
You didn't laugh because clearly you didn't get it. Let me explain it to you.
No. All right, let's go again. I thought it was great.
What kind of music does your chiropractor like to listen to? What kind of music does your chiropractor like to listen to?
I don't know.
I was trying to come up with...
I know, I was trying to find something.
Yeah, I can't get it.
Hip-hop.
All right, that was good.
And thanks to the Boom Crew for that submission.
Wow,
I believe that one was
good.
From Scott.
Hip-hop.
So thank you for that.
Hip-hop. That's pretty good.
If you've got jokes to send them my way, I've been getting them by all forms of communication, which is awesome. In the mail, by email, on Facebook. I've now become known as the joke person, which is kind of fun since my jokes are so bad. Text the word jokes to 312-274-9624. If you want today's jokes, text jokes to 312-274-9624.
Hip-hop.
That was good.
Hip-hop.
It actually kind of surprised me a little bit, so I'm happy. I like that one.
Oh,
okay,
man.
You didn't see the punchline coming?
I didn't see it coming.
Do you normally see them coming?
No, not always.
You didn't see botany coming.
I didn't see botany coming.
But you did get it right away.
I did.
You're still questioning your veracity on this
sticking
thing.
To your story, huh?
We're still going to go with that.
Wow.
Whoa. It's rough, man. When the joke teller's the rough audience, you got a rough audience. All right, guys. Text word jokes to 312-274-9624, and you'll get those two dandies out there right away. Enjoy them.
Need a wake-up call? We can help with that. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
All right, guys, we're in a week of doubt. You ever had a doubt? What's the biggest thing you ever doubted in your life, Young Thunder?
Gospel-centered or just in general?
Anything.
Did you
doubt Santa Claus?
I didn't doubt Santa Claus until, I never really doubted him. I was told he wasn't real. And so I was like, he is real. My brother's like, no, he's not.
Till what? Like 17?
Yeah, around there. No, around 8.
When did your brother try to spill the beans?
I think when I was in second grade.
Oh.
And so I ran downstairs. I go, Mom, Dad, Santa Claus is real, right? And they go, No. And then I was so upset, I ruined it for everybody at school. I was like, how can you even think that Santa Claus is real? I was like, it's not.
So you were that kid.
I was. I was so upset that I was like, you're all believing a lie.
If I'm getting ripped off, everybody's getting ripped off.
That's exactly right. But in terms of doubts, I guess they probably would be gospel or Bible centered.
What's the biggest Bible doubt ever?
Yeah, for me, it would be kind of what we talked about yesterday. You know, there are some things that, because, you know, there's predestination, there's free will. Those things are well, arguments. They're not.
Yeah, those are theological positions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, but along the lines of like questioning God's methods is what we were talking about yesterday, hearing the violence that is in the Bible, the annihilation of people.
Yeah.
Of nations. And how can God be good and those things happen at the same time?
Okay, Boom Crew, you're listening to that going, yesterday, I missed that. Yeah, Dr. Michael Rydelnik. So some of you are like, oh, and it was good. If you want to get some really solid biblical answers for why in the world does God appear to be so violent with people groups, large people groups, where they're told, annihilate them, take them all out. When Israel's going into the land of Canaan, the promised land. Text the word show. Get hooked up with our showcast. It is, we got thousands are tapping into this because everything we're doing in a morning, we go, we crunch it down.
Yeah.
It's about what, 40, 45 minutes to an hour?
Yeah,
max?
It usually hangs around there. And I would say, you know, as someone who struggled with that doubt on that question specifically, yesterday was a great way of addressing it.
Yeah.
So it's beneficial to go and check it out.
Text the word show to 312-274-9624. Show to 312-274-9624. Allie's never doubted anything. She looks, she's always just taking it right there. It's like right there. I don't need to see his hands and his wounds in his side. Nothing.
Sure. Sure. Is that where you want to leave it?
No. The fact is they're common, aren't they?
Yes. I think it's, I don't know anybody who doesn't have.
No.
Or hasn't wrestled with some doubt at some point.
And I want you to know what we've been saying all week here. And I believe this from the bottom of my heart. It's found in John 13. And I'm grateful to God for this, that Jesus accommodated Thomas in his doubts. Skepticism, still good. Cynicism is a different kind of doubting altogether. That's not even a cousin of doubting. That's more akin to rebellion than it is to doubting. So if you are a skeptic, if you have some questions, if you have some doubts, bring them to Jesus. He can handle them, right, Allie?
And if you missed anything this week, text the word SHOW to 312-274-9624.
Hey, this is Carl with Carl and Crew, and I'm so grateful that you listen to this showcast. Thank you mostly for being part of the Boom Crew. As we help you take your next step with Jesus, you're a huge encouragement to us. We'll be here again live every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. Godspeed.